took hold of his hand. Purple. Queen Rukmini took hold of Krishna's hand to prevent him from eating any more of the flat rice. According to Sripad Sridhar Swami, with this gesture, she meant to tell the Lord, "This much of your grace is sufficient to assure anyone vast riches, which are merely the play of my glance. But please do not force me to surrender myself to this Brahmana, as will happen if you eat one more handful." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that by taking hold of the Lord's hand, Rukmini implied, "If you eat all of this wonderful treat your friend brought from his house, what will I have left for my friends, co-wives, servants, and myself? There will not be enough left to distribute even one grain to each of us." And to her maidservant companions, she said by her gesture, "This hard rice will upset my Lord's tender stomach." Srila Prabhupada comments that when food is offered to Lord Krishna with love and devotion, and he is pleased and accepts it from the devotee, Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, becomes so greatly obliged to the devotee that she has to personally go to the devotee's home to turn it into the most opulent home in the world. If one feeds Narayan sumptuously, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, automatically becomes a guest in one's house, which means that one's home becomes opulent. Omagyan, Timurandasya, Ginanjana, Shalakaya, Chakshun, Militam, Jena, Tasmai, Sri Gurave, Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam, Stapitam Yena, Bhutale, Swayam Rupa, Kadamayam. Dadati swa padantikam vancha kalpatu rubyascha kripa sindubhi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishna vebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Today is an extremely auspicious day. Today is called Basant Panchami. Today, in Vrindavan, it is the first day of spring. And these days, the world is not very pious. Just like in Melbourne. Melbourne is famous because we have four seasons in one day. But in a pious land, the seasons are very regulated. It mentions that when Lord Ramachandra ruled the earth for 11,000 years, it would only rain at night time. Everyone would take rest, it would rain, soak the earth, and then everyone would wake up in the morning and the skies were blue all day. And why was that? Because of piety. Because when the citizens are pious, everything becomes very harmonious. Krishna is pleased, the demigods are pleased, and the universe runs very harmoniously. But these days, because everything is so turbulent in the world, because the consciousness of the individuals is so turbulent, is so disturbed, agitated, because everyone has disturbed consciousness in Kali Yuga, then they perform impious activities, sinful activities, and because of those sinful activities, the whole world becomes disturbed. That is a reaction to their impiety. But in a pious land, everything is very regulated. The seasons are very regulated. And in Vrindavan, I was in Vrindavan 1991 and 1992. I think I was there on this day, Basant Panchami. And today is the first day of spring. And on this day, because Vrindavan, at least back then, there was a lot of piety there. Still there's a lot of piety there, but Kali Yuga is infiltrated. But on the first day of spring, as soon as this day came, on this day, all the flowers in the fields, yellow flowers, what type of flowers were they? The yellow flowers. I can't remember what sort of crop it was, but it was yellow. Do you know what it is?
Sunflower?
Might have been sunflower. Or some kind of yellow flower. On this day, suddenly, the whole field just turned yellow. On this day, right? And this is because of the piety. Right? If you're pious, then the seasons run in a very regulated way. You have six seasons in India. In the spiritual world, there are six seasons. Right? You have winter. Right? Winter finishes today. Right? And then spring begins. Then after spring, you have the first summer, the very hot summer. And then when the very hot summer is finished and the monsoon comes, right? And then it rains for a couple of months. And then when the monsoon finishes, there is the second summer, which is a less hot summer, it's more mild. And then you have autumn, and everything happens very in a regulated way. So today is very auspicious today. Today is Vasant Panchami, the first day of spring, Vasant. So spring is Krishna's favorite season, spring and autumn. And in Vrindavan, everything becomes very beautiful in spring. All the flowers come out automatically. Actually, in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, all six seasons are present simultaneously. Krishna does not have to wait 6 months for winter to come. If Krishna wants to enjoy winter, winter is there to serve him immediately. And actually, it says around Radha Kund, there are six seasonal forests. So Radharani and Krishna, they can discuss amongst themselves, which season do you want to enjoy today? And Krishna says spring, so they go off into the spring forest. Or the next day they can say, let's enjoy the summer forest, so they go into the summer forest. Or they go into the monsoon. All these seasons are there simultaneously to serve Krishna. So all of us have a choice. Do you want to stay in Melbourne and enjoy four seasons in one day? Or do you want to go to Goloka Vrindavan and enjoy six seasons in one day? The choice is yours. Like that. If you want to go to the spiritual world, you have to become very serious. Spiritual world is not easy to get to. Hands up if you'd like to go to the spiritual world. Very good, 100%. But hands up if you're willing to pay the price. Okay, you've got to be careful. If you say that in front of the person who is holding the flute, right, it's a very dangerous thing to say. If you say to Krishna, I'm willing to pay the price to go into the spiritual world, Krishna will say, really? Are you really ready? And say, yeah, I'm ready. Okay, let's see. I'll test you. And then the tests come. And the tests are not easy. Because Krishna wants to see, are you really serious? Or are you just one of these devotees who just puts up their hand in the class and says, yes, I would like to go to the spiritual world. Right? Or are you actually serious to get there? If you want to get to the spiritual world, you have to be willing to give up everything material in this world, all material enjoyment. Right? Hands up if you are willing to give up all material enjoyment and go to the spiritual world. Well, that's your choice as well. You can do it right now or you can do it later on. But if you want to go there, if you want to go to the spiritual world, you have to become very serious. This is a serious movement. It's also a very joyful movement. Just like we had kirtan before class. So kirtan is ecstatic, right? It is blissful. Anandam buddhi varadhanam means it is an ever-increasing ocean of bliss. That is kirtan. It is an ever-increasing ocean of bliss. But if you want to taste that ever-increasing ocean of bliss, you have to be very serious as a devotee. You can't just sleep in, get up at 6:45, right? Run to the shower, right? Half clean yourself, put on your tilak all crooked, run into the temple, you know, rubbing the sleep out of your eyes. That's not serious. If you want to be serious in Krishna consciousness, you have to get up very early in the morning. There's a great emphasis by Srila Prabhupada in his books and in the early days of ISKCON. In the early days of ISKCON, devotees would always rise for the Brahma Muhurta. Because Prabhupada states again and again and again in his books that the most auspicious time to practice spiritual life is the Brahma Muhurta. Brahma Muhurta means 1 hour and a half before the sun rises. What time is the sun rising at the moment?
5:30.
Close to 7.
Close to 7. Is it? Is it 7 already? Okay, I thought it was in there, like that. So like that, close to 7. I think it might be early at the moment. I think the sun's coming up early. You have to rise an hour and a half before the sun rises.
Half past five, like that.
But maybe a little bit earlier. You should attend the Mangala Arati. What does the Mangala mean? Mangala. Yeah, Mangala means auspicious. It is the auspicious arati. Prabhupada said, if you come for the Mangala arati, your whole day will be auspicious. Guaranteed. This shows that you are serious in spiritual life. You have to attend the Mangala arati, like that. And then you attend the Tulsi Puja. It is not that you walk out and start chanting your japa during the Tulsi Puja. Prabhupada gave us each of these parts of the morning program. Why? Because every one of them is equally important. You can get unlimited blessings from each part of these of the morning program. Right? Tulsi Puja is extremely auspicious to worship Tulsi Devi, Srimati Tulsi Devi. Srimati Tulsi Devi is an eternal associate of Krishna from the spiritual world. She's not a material personality. She's not a conditioned soul like us. She's an eternally liberated associate of Krishna. That's why we worship her. Right? What other religion is there in the world where you bow down to a plant?
Rastafarians.
Was it? Rastafarians. And just see what the result is. But this is the only religion in the world where we worship a plant. So that plant must be extremely auspicious. If we circumambulate her, worship her, take very good care of her, like that. She is to be worshipped. She's an eternal associate of Krishna. And then we chant our japa. Right? Now, when you take initiation into the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition in ISKCON, you're asked to do four things, which are called nisheda. Nisheda means things which you should avoid. And you're asked to do one thing which is called vidhi, which you must apply or practice. Right? So the four things which we avoid are meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. Must be avoided. If you want to go back to the spiritual world, you must avoid these four things. It is not possible to indulge in these four things and go back to the spiritual world. It is like tying an anchor to this material world. It's like binding yourself to the material world. You must give up those four things. Right? No compromise. And then, one thing that you're asked to do. Chant 16 rounds, minimum, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, every day. Now, the quality of the japa is all important. Now, when I came to the temple this morning, I saw that devotees were chanting japa in a very casual way, many devotees. For a start, when you chant your japa, you must be in a very concentrated state. You are worshipping the holy name of Krishna. Right? When you chant Hare Krishna, then Radha and Krishna are dancing on your tongue. Right? Now you can imagine, right? If Radha and Krishna personally came here right now and began to dance, what would we all do? Right? If Krishna and Radharani came off the altar now and began to dance in front of us, right in the middle of this lotus, what would we all do?
Pay attention.
Right? Huh?
Is that the chant?
Yeah, we would chant.
There's a black rock in the garden, I'll go catch it and bring it in.
Yeah, that's good. What did you say?
Pay attention.
Pay attention. Everyone would be captivated. Right? Everyone would be captivated. We wouldn't all be sitting there going. Prabhu, Radha and Krishna are dancing here. You would not be doing that. Right? So you understand every time you say Hare Krishna, and when you chant 16 rounds, you are chanting 25,000 names of God a day. When you chant 16 rounds, there's 16 names in each mantra. Right? 108 times 16, that's 25,000. That's a big commitment. And every single one of those mantras, every single one of those names of Krishna, Hare means Srimati Radharani, Krishna and Rama mean Krishna, they're dancing on your tongue. So what will you do when they come? You should be attentive. You should worship them. You should give them your full attention and concentration and respect. Not that you're walking all around. I mean, what I saw devotees today, chanting japa, just walking around. What are you doing? Just walking around the courtyard. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. It's a nice day, isn't it? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. That's not japa. Japa means concentration, it's meditation. I saw some devotees reading the notice board. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. What are you doing? Right, get serious about your life.
Trying to stay awake.
Trying to stay awake, right? You should already be awake. You should have sufficient sleep. If you're not overeating, right, that's the first thing. If you want to get serious about your japa, you have to stop overeating, right? And you have to sleep sufficiently. Don't go to bed too late. Go to bed at a reasonable time. Get up early. Have a good shower. Finish with a cold shower, right? Even in winter, you have a warm shower, but at the end, finish cold. Right? That will wake you up. Right? Actually, if you have a cold shower, it says in the Ayurveda, it's extremely beneficial for the body. Right there. That media makes you mentally alert. And then you come to Mangalati and you chant your japa. And okay, you might feel sleepy, but that's the battle. That's the battle. Right? You have to stay awake. If you're serious, you have to fight through it. It's not that you can't overcome sleep. Right? But you have to be very determined. Right? Prabhupada said spiritual life is not static, it is ecstatic. So when the chanting of japa is ecstatic. If you need to stay awake, you get up and you walk around. But you should stay in the holy place. You should stay in the temple. Unless it's very hot. I know sometimes it's very hot. And then you may have to go out because it's too stuffy like that. But most of the time, I've been chanting in this temple room for years and years and years. Very rarely do I have to go out. You should stay there, sit down in one spot and just chant. And if you need to get up and walk around, then you can circumambulate Tulsi Devi. Or the Mataji stay up there in Prabhupada's room. Right? Which, Prabhupada's room, I mean, there are not many places in the world where we actually have the quarters where Prabhupada actually resided. Right? There's probably only 15 or 20 places in the entire world where we still have Prabhupada's rooms intact. Right? This place is very powerful, very auspicious. We should spend as much time as we can in Prabhupada's room. The atmosphere is extremely sublime. So we go into Prabhupada's room, the Mataji's chat in Prabhupada's room, and just sit down and chant your japa very seriously. This is the morning program. If you want to go back to the spiritual world, you have to apply the process. And then after we chant our japa, what do we do? Has anyone been here before? What do we do after we chant our japa? Greeting the deities. Now, when you greet the deities, right, this is the equivalent in the olden times, everyone would have darshan of the king. Right? The king would come out every day and give darshan to the citizens. So the citizens were waiting there eagerly to see the king. So this is what happens when we greet the deities in the morning. We must all be there waiting for the curtains to open and eager to see the deities. Right? And if you apply this kind of devotional mentality when you perform these activities, you'll get so much reciprocation from Krishna. Right? If you are very, just like sometimes, the deities open, and devotees are still like, sorting out their dhoti or their sari and you know, kind of very in a very distracted type of consciousness, you won't get the reciprocation from the deities. If you want to get the reciprocation, you have to be attentive towards them. Then we take the Charanamrita. We have the Guru Puja. Now, Guru Puja means you're worshipping the Guru. So when you're worshipping the Guru, the attention should be on the Guru. Sometimes you'll see the Mataji's are still looking at the deities during the Guru Puja. Actually, that's not correct. We should be looking at the Guru during the Guru Puja. Right? You look at the deities during Darshan and during the Kirtan. Like that. So the consciousness should be on Prabhupada. We should be meditating on what the song of the Vaishnava Charya is about. Sri Guru, Charana Padma, Kevala Bhakati Sadma. The lotus feet of the spiritual master are the only way in which you can attain pure devotional service. Bandhu Mui Savatana Mate. I bow down to his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. Yeah, I'm meditating on that. Not that devotees are having like side conversations and this kind of. It's actually offensive to being the Guru Puja and, you know, devotees are just having like a conversation on the side. It's not good like that. So this is attentiveness like that. And then we have Kirtan. Kirtan means that we perform the activity, we do the chanting. But what are we doing the Kirtan for? What is the purpose of the Kirtan? What's that? For the pleasure of the deities, right? It's for the pleasure of the deities, right? It is not a football match. Surprise, surprise, right? It is not just, you know, let's have fun, let's be as wild as we can, and let's us all enjoy. No, it's for the pleasure of the deities. I was listening to one lecture recently, and one disciple of Prabhupada, it was in 1975, it was in San Francisco or Los Angeles, and they organized a big public program for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada came and he was going to give a talk at this public program, and there was about 80 brahmacharis who came. You know, about 400 devotees came to the program in 1975. Prabhupada was going to give a big program, and many people from the outside, from outside of ISKCON, they came to the program. And before Prabhupada spoke, they had a big kirtan. So the devotee said there was about 20 brahmacharis in the circle, tightly packed in. And they're having an old style ISKCON kirtan, you know. Like that. So everyone was just, like that. Kirtan was going on. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Right, fine. And I was just going around in a circle. And I couldn't see, because I was just listening to the lecture, so I couldn't see what the devotee was explaining, but it sounded like from what he's explaining. He said the devotees were kind of, he said it was like a football match. So he said the devotees are going, that is what it sounded like they're going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare. Right? Big kirtan. Right? Everyone's in ecstasy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Spinning around, right? 20 brahmacharis locked in like that, and 400 devotees, probably hundreds of guests. Prabhupada stopped the kirtan. He called one devotee over, he came over, and he said, go down, tell them to stop the kirtan. They went down and they stopped the kirtan. And everyone was just like shocked. Right? Right in the front. Prabhupada just stopped it. And everyone just looked up at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, not like this. And Prabhupada went, Prabhupada said, not like this. He said, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement is like this. He said, start again. So all the devotees started, but this time their consciousness is much different. Right? Prabhupada brought everyone to the transcendental platform. Right? Kirtan is not just an excuse for the mode of passion to come out. Right? It's not about bile secretion. Right? It's not just, well, let's get hot and sweaty and like that. No, it's kirtan. Kirtan should be graceful. It should be for the pleasure of the deities. Right? We're not dancing wildly so we can attract the brahmacharinis. Right? The brahmacharinis not doing their little gopi dance up the back so they can attract the men. Right? It's for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. It's for the pleasure of Gaur Nitai. It's for the pleasure of Jagannath Balaram Subhadra. That's the point. And then we come to Bhagavatam class. This is the full morning program. If you stay in the temple, I remember my spiritual master used to say this. If you stay in the temple means, you know, if you might have just gone to Chanting Prabhupada's room or like that. But if you stay in the temple between 4:30 in the morning till 8:30 in the morning, you don't leave the temple. And you just follow the full program in the right consciousness and attentively, you're guaranteed you'll go back to Godhead in this lifetime. But if you do not follow the program properly, right? If you fall asleep, and like this morning I just came and I saw everyone chanting their japa all over the place, and I went, what is this? How serious are you about your spiritual life? We'll ask the question again. Who wants to go back to Godhead? Okay, everyone puts their hand up. Okay. Now, who's serious? Who's going to improve their application of the morning program tomorrow? Who's going to chant better japa tomorrow? Who's going to get up early, go to Mangalarti, and make sure they stay in the temple the whole japa period and chant? That's the point. That's good. Srila Prabhupada ki. Going back home, back to Godhead ki. Okay. So this is what it's like. Okay, the spiritual world is ecstatic. Now, the spiritual world is ecstatic, but if you want to get to the spiritual world, you have to be serious. It's very blissful. The whole trip is blissful. Don't worry about the trip. Right? Going back to Godhead is ecstatic. Right? Being back in the spiritual world is ecstatic. Going back to Godhead is ecstatic. You don't have to worry about it. Don't think, oh, it's so dry and boring, and oh, you know, what am I going to do for fun? You know, you don't have to worry about that. See, Krishna consciousness is ecstatic. But if you want to get there, first you have to be serious. Then you can be ecstatic. Not that you're all slack and then you think, oh, I'll just be in the mode of passion and then I'll... No, you won't go back like that. It has to be the right consciousness, the right application. Now here it is mentioned that Rukmini Devi, she is offering the food to Krishna. Sudama Brahmana is offering the bhoga to Krishna. And then Rukmini Devi is saying, Prabhupada comments, when food is offered to Lord Krishna with love and devotion, and he is pleased and accepts it from the devotee, Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, becomes so greatly obliged to the devotee that she has to personally go to the devotee's home to turn it into the most opulent home in the world. So this is the system. The offerings to the Lord, right? They have to be cooked in very high consciousness for Krishna to accept it. For bhoga to turn into prasadam, there has to be the right consciousness, right? It's not automatic. Krishna does not accept an offering from anyone and everyone. Krishna only accepts an offering from who? From
Radharani.
Yep, and a few other people as well. It's true. Radharani is the principal offerer to Krishna. But who does Krishna accept his offerings from?
Sudama Mira.
Very good. Also, that's true. From the devotee. He only accepts the offering from a devotee, from a bhakta, or a bhakti. Someone who has bhakti. If there's no bhakti, Krishna does not relish the offering. He says, patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam, yome bhakya. Ashnami means I relish the offering because it has bhakti in it. And it's interesting because one of the acharyas, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the acharyas, when he comments on that verse, he says what that actually means, because we say patram pushpam phalam toyam, it means offer me leaf, fruit, flower or water, right? Leaf means
tulsi,
like that. So you offer me leaf, fruit, flower, or water. Now, the acharya's comment, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments, that actually means the devotees should grow the food, they should pick the food, they should cook the food, they should offer the food, then it becomes prasad, they should distribute the prasad, and then they should honour the prasadam. The acharya says that's actually what it means when Krishna says bhakti. He wants the devotees to offer it to him. At the moment, we buy all the sabji from the market, right? Because we're not growing the sabji ourselves. But actually, Krishna wants us to grow it. And that's why Prabhupada established the farms. Huh? And that's what we're praying to the deities that we can do in the future. We can actually grow the bhoga ourselves to offer to the deities. Milk the cows ourselves to offer it to the deities. All these things, then Krishna relishes that offering. Now the offering, Prabhupada taught us how to offer prasad, how to offer the bhoga to Krishna, so it will become accepted. Prabhupada said, practically one of the most important elements while preparing the offering, two things are very important. One thing is the cleanliness of the kitchen. Prabhupada had so much emphasis on this. Right? Prabhupada would emphasize that if the kitchen is not clean, Krishna will not accept the offering. It doesn't matter how opulent it is. Prabhupada actually says this. If the kitchen is not clean, Krishna does not accept the offering. He doesn't relish an offering from a dirty kitchen. Right? That is bhakti. Bhakti means the kitchen must be kept clean. It is God's kitchen. Therefore it must be clean. It must be pristine. Then Krishna relishes the offering. And the other thing which is extremely important is the consciousness of the devotees. You understand that you're cooking for Krishna. Therefore your consciousness must be on Krishna while you're cooking. Because if your consciousness is on sense gratification, right, it will disturb the devotees when they take the offering, even though it's been offered to Krishna and may be accepted by Krishna. But when they take the offering, if the devotee is meditating on sense gratification, it will disturb the consciousness of the devotees who take that prasad. And we've seen that. I remember when I was in Adelaide many, many years ago, about 1991, and there was one devotee who was not, who hadn't been following the regulative principles, and his consciousness was meditating on sense gratification. And then I went to that temple and I started taking prasad, and this devotee was cooking quite often, 3 or 4 times a week for the devotees. And I noticed, I was only a new devotee, and I noticed that I was being affected by lust. You know, my consciousness was becoming, you know, attracted to the opposite sex, and I was thinking, I started to really struggle. And then I didn't realize until later, now that I look back on it, because then I found out later on that that devotee wasn't following properly. Right? Then, it was affecting the consciousness of the other devotees because we were taking the prasad. But that devotee was not thinking of Krishna. That devotee was thinking of sense gratification. And it was affecting everyone's consciousness. It enters into the cooking. So therefore it is most important that if you cook prasad for the deities and if you cook prasad for the other devotees, you have to be in good consciousness because it will affect everyone else in the temple. So you have to guarantee that your consciousness is pure, it is fixed on Krishna as much as you can be, because then everyone else will become purified. And you'll see that the more elevated the devotee is, the more nectarian the offering becomes. Just like I remember in 1994, I was in Jagannath Puri with Umapati Swami. Umapati Swami was one of Prabhupada's first disciples from 1966 in New York City, and I said to Maharaj, we were taking prasad at Jagannath Puri, and I said to Maharaj, did you ever eat anything which was cooked by Prabhupada? And he said, yes. And I said, what was it like? And he said, I cannot describe it. It was not from this world. One time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj went into Prabhupada's room when Prabhupada was staying in San Francisco, I think this was 1968, and Prabhupada gave him a laddu, and he said, try this. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj tasted it. And then Prabhupada said, what do you think? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, it is not from this world. And Prabhupada said, actually, it is a recipe from Mother Yashoda. So this is the point. When we cook for Krishna, we have to be in spiritual consciousness. So this is the point. And then when the prasadam is served, now when we serve the prasadam, there is a culture, there is an etiquette behind serving the prasadam. Right? The bhoga has been offered to the deities, and then when class is finished, we'll go upstairs and we'll honour prasadam. It was interesting, it was in 1970, I think. Then Prabhupada came to London in 1970, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there. And Prabhupada asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj to write an invitation to our life members to come to one of our programs. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote the the invitation, and then Prabhupada said, show it to me before you send it. So Prabhupada, Tamal Krishnamurti wrote, you know, please come to this program, and then he said, and take prasad. So then he showed it to Prabhupada, and when Prabhupada read it, he went through the whole thing, and then Prabhupada read the whole thing, and then when he got to it, he said, no, change it to honor prasad. Right? Please come and honor prasadam. This food that we eat every morning, you know, we just think, oh great, you know, I hope they have enough avocado this morning. Or I hope there's enough pakoras. You know, I'll make sure I stash a few pakoras before it goes around. Right? I don't know what we're thinking. But you have to understand this food has been eaten by God. You know, what is our fortune out of 5 million people or 4 million people who are living in this city this morning? There's only about 40 of us who are actually going to eat food which has been directly offered and tasted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That must be honoured. So it is very important how we respect the prasadam. It's very important how we serve out the prasadam. Just like I also see when I come here sometimes that the devotees have this help yourself system. Yeah, we might as well just put it on tables and just have like a smorgasbord. Just like you go to a restaurant. Just like you go to what are those restaurants called where you just help yourself? Sizzler. I think there's one called Smorgies. Okay. So we just put a sign out the front. Hare Krishna Smorgies. You just come in and we just put it all on the table and you just go around to the buffet and you put a little bit on your plate. That's not Vaishnava culture. Where do you hear in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Lord Chaitanya just puts it all on benches and just says to all the devotees, well, go and help yourself? No, that's not the system at all. Right? The system is, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Lord Chaitanya would personally serve out all of the devotees. Everyone would sit down in line, right? And Lord Chaitanya would personally go along with his own hand. Imagine, the Supreme Lord himself, with his own hand, putting the prasadam on everyone's plates. Serving out all the devotees. Right? And then the devotees wouldn't start eating until he would start. So Swarup Damodar would come and say, Mahaprabhu, you have to sit down. So then he would sit down, he would take them, and everyone would chant Hari Bol, and everyone else would take prasad. This was the system. So the system is that we should be eager to serve the other devotees. Right? If you really want to taste the sweetness in prasad, you serve prasad. Don't just get up there and just sit down. You know, sometimes you see devotees just get up there and they just sit there. Yeah, and just wait for everyone else to serve them. What is the consciousness? The consciousness should be we should be competing with each other to serve out the prasad, and then we should serve the devotees. And if any devotee comes late, those who are serving out should say, Prabhu, please sit down, we'll serve you. This is the system, this is the culture. Right? The culture should not be lost. Right? This is the way Prabhupada established ISKCON, and certain things should not be diluted over time. So there's many more things we could say. Maybe one day we'll have a prasadam sevaya class. Right? I've got a whole class that we give just all about how to honour prasadam. Right? We can speak for a couple of hours just about honouring prasadam. It's a whole culture like that. About cleanliness. We have a class that we do about cleanliness. That takes, you know, a couple of hours just to go through what Prabhupada expected of us in terms of cleanliness. This is the culture of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said these are rules. These are small rules, but he said, if you follow them, that is the proof that you love Krishna. And sometimes we think, oh, there's so many rules. Right? But the rules are there, why? Prabhupada says, because if you follow them, who do the rules come from? They come from Krishna. So Prabhupada said, you follow them, you're proving to Krishna that you love him, because I will follow what you teach. Simple things like that, but we don't neglect them. And Prabhupada said to the devotees one time, he said, if I gave you all the rules, you would faint. Prabhupada didn't give us all the rules when he started this time. You know, if you go back into the Gaudiya Vaishnava, or you go to the Gaudiya Mats in India, they really follow rules. ISKCON doesn't follow like they do. I mean, we follow all the basics like that. We follow the proper etiquettes. But there, I mean, they really follow. They're like that. Prabhupada said, I did not give you all the rules because you will faint. But at least what he did give us, what Prabhupada gave us, we should follow that and keep that intact. Okay. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Mataji.
You told us all the things that are following the process.
then we should educate the devotees. Devotees should be educated. They should be trained properly so that everyone knows the standards. So if a devotee is not following, we should not become arrogant or develop like a superiority complex, like I'm following you or not, but we should educate the devotee. And say, Prabhu, you know, if we're serving prasad, sit down and I'll serve you prasad. And then if this culture and this training and this education is given and the standards are maintained, then everyone will begin to follow also. I don't know, does that help? Or? Yeah, so we should not become offensive. Offensiveness is not good. Like that. Any other question or comment? Martha?
In the ladies chanting room upstairs, we have two people.
In the ladies chanting room?
In Prabhupada's room.
Prabhupada's room.
Very often we don't sit down and we sit down there. What would your advice be in relation to practicality?
Yeah, it's okay. You should circumambulate Tulsi every day. That's part of our sadhana, that we circumambulate every day. But it's not that you have to circumambulate her every time while you're chanting. It's not like that. One thing is that if you are chanting japa up in Prabhupada's room, you should, if you're going to walk up and down, you should walk across the room, not from back to front. Because if you're walking from back to front, then every time you turn around, your back's towards Prabhupada. Like that. So if you are going to walk back and forward, then you should be walking crossways. Even in the temple, you see sometimes devotees go up and down, but that's not correct. If you're going to walk, then you should walk that way. I think so. Someone else put their hand up?
When we have service in the morning during program, how do you recommend
the best is that you go to the program and do japa afterwards. That's the best. So the managers, it's their responsibility to make sure the devotees are going to the program, you know, at least 4 or 5 days a week. Not that they've got service, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, and they just go to the program 2 or 3 days a week. It should be managed amongst the managers that the devotees go 4 or 5 days a week, at least. Actually, the devotees should go 7 days a week. But because, you know, we do have services to do and so forth, then it should be spread around so each devotee can go the proper amount of time. And the devotees should not have so much service that they don't have time to chant their japa properly. And they don't have time to, like, you know, if they do service and go to the program, they should have time during the day they can chant their japa. Not that they've got so much service that they just have to miss everything, and everyone just gets full of anxiety. Sometimes we go through, like, emergency periods where we have to surrender and do more service because we have less devotees. Sometimes we go through those periods, but it can't go on and on and on and on for a long time. Did that answer?
We're talking about chanting, and how can we, because we do know the three levels of chanting, how can we elevate our chanting to come to the same instead so that people have internal
Yeah, well, the first stage is called nam aparash. That means you're chanting with offences. The second stage is called nam abas. That means you're clearing out the offences. And the third stage is called Shuddhanam, which means pure chanting. Which means chanting with love for Krishna. That's the highest stage. So how do we come from Namapara to Namabhas? You have to learn what the offences are. Just like every morning, in the morning program. It's interesting, if you look at what Prabhupada put in the program, in the morning program, he put the essential things in the program. So one of the things we do after Tulsi Adi is that we chant the 10 offences. Yeah, and many devotees just chant them mechanically. Number one, Vaishnava, 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 Lord. Number two, See them thing on like Krishna is number three. Just wait on the screen now. Number four. Yeah, and devotees is like, you know, as soon as it's finished I can start saying, no, we should be meditating what those offences are. Like that. So if you understand what the offences are, then you can avoid committing those offences. Then you're not chanting Nam Aparad, you're chanting Nam Abbas. Like that. Nam Abbas means you know what the offences are and you're trying not to commit them. Even though sometimes you may commit them, but you're trying not to commit them. And you're gradually clearing them away. If you chant in Nam Abbas, you'll very quickly make advancement. Now the most important of the offences, which we say is number 11, but in Harinam Chintamani it's actually in the 10, but in Nectar of Devotion it's number 11, like that. But the most important of the offences is to be inattentive whilst chanting. Right? You see devotees, you know, chanting their japa and reading the notice board. Right? What sort of chanting is that? Attentive or inattentive?
Huh?
Yeah, so why are they doing it? Right? So it's offensive chanting. Right? So you have to chant in a very concentrated way. And if you chant attentively, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the other offences you will not commit the other offences. But if you don't chant attentively, the other offences will sneak in. Right? Because you're not getting purified. Chanting is supposed to purify our consciousness. If you chant nicely, your consciousness becomes purified. You don't want to commit offences to devotees. You don't want to say, you know, bad things about devotees. You don't want to hear bad things about devotees. You know, all these offences become overcome by chanting properly.
What is it that someday is like, we want the truth of chanting? It's like, you can't really regret it. Like,
sometimes you wake up and it's
almost
impossible
to, you know, get
hold of the mind because
it goes, you know,
goes off
your
hands. What
is the reason for that?
I'm still trying to work it out. That's the nature of the mind. But at the end of the sixth chapter in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says the same thing to Krishna. He says, fighting with the mind is more difficult than controlling the wind. Right? And Arjuna was powerful. Right? He was a powerful personality. And he said, but this is more difficult. The mind is so difficult to control. And then Krishna says two things. Yeah, he says, by practice and detachment. Right? Practice means, okay, you're chanting the japa, the mind goes off. Okay, there it goes, bring it back. Right? Chanting a japa, it goes off, bring it back. Some days it goes more, some days it goes less. But if you keep practicing, you'll learn to control it. You can learn to fix it like that. And detachment. Detachment means don't let it get into things which it shouldn't get into. Detach yourself from those things. And you can only detach yourself from those things, Krishna says, param drishtva nivasate, if you have a higher taste. If you have something better, then you can give up those things. But if you find, you know, if you've been a devotee for some time, you find material desires are coming up again, like that, then you have to get deeper into the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. You have to get the higher taste so you can overcome those attachments. Otherwise, you see sometimes devotees leave. Huh? This means they weren't chanting attentively. It means they weren't following the program properly. They stop following the program properly, they lose their taste, then the other things come. Right, and then they get a taste for that, and then gone. So you can only be detached if you're absorbed in something good. You can't just be detached; you have to have something better. Like if someone says to you, you know, do you want a nice bowl of halva, or would you like a bowl of sawdust? Sawdust. Anything. You can put anything you want in the bowl. Right. But the point is, then everyone will say, oh, it's easy to give up. I don't want that. Right, because I have the nice thing. So if you have Krishna consciousness, right, if you're getting a taste from Krishna consciousness, it's easy to give up other things. But if you're not getting a taste, then everything becomes difficult. Like that. And it's easy to get a taste. You just come to the program, 4:30 to 8:30, oh, the taste is there. Even some days, okay, maybe less, but... Today is Vishnu Priya Day. Vishnu Priya is one of the two wives of... I know. But there's five people there, sorry. The Vishnu Priya is the wife of Mahaprabhu. Today is her appearance day, one of Mahaprabhu's two wives. Then Pundarik Vijaniti. Pundarik Vijaniti is actually an incarnation of Vrishabhanu Maharaj, who's Shrimati Radharani's father. Appeared as Pundarik Vijaniti and Chaitanya Leela. And then Raghunandan Thakur was a great follower of Lord Chaitanya. I can't remember a lot of details about him. And then Raghunath Das Goswami, his appearance there. Raghunath Das Goswami is one of the six Goswamis to bring up. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was, if you go back in our disciplic succession, if you see on the altar, if you go back from Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur to Gaur Vishuddha Babaji Maharaj to Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and then on the altar we have Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And then the next acharya is Baladev Vijayabhushan, and then the next acharya is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he was extremely powerful acharya, and he wrote many of the commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And many of the commentaries that Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam are based on the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he was an extremely elevated acharya. So we could speak a lot about all those personalities, but we don't have time today. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yam yam bhapi smaram bhavan. Smarana means what you remember. So Krishna says, what you remember at the time of death, that state you will attain without fail. Right? Krishna says, without fail. Right? So you're not going to remember Krishna unless you practice remembering him your whole life. Unless you remember Krishna every day of your life, how is he going to be there at the time of death? Right? At the final moment, how will you fix your mind on Krishna? So you can try Ajamil's program if you want. But it's a big risk. It's a big risk. Prabhupada says, aim for a, like, when you go to school, what's the highest mark you can get at school?
A plus.
Okay. So you can say A plus. So Prabhupada says, you go to school, you aim for A plus. Okay, if you get a B, then maybe Krishna says, okay, you only got a B, but anyway, you tried so hard. I'll let you come. But if you're slack and you say, well, you know, I'll just go for a B, then you know, you might get a C, you might get a D, you might get an F. Ajamil didn't go straight back to Godhead. If you're reading the Bhagavatam, he went to Hardwar in his next life, and he had to practice a whole life of sadhana, and then he went back to Godhead. He didn't just go straight back to the spiritual world. It doesn't say that in the Bhagavatam. So you have to be serious. If you want to go back to the spiritual world, you have to practice every day. And especially while you're a brahmachari or a brahmacharini, you have to practice very seriously. Because as soon as you get married, it all changes. Right? It's a lot harder as a grihastha. A lot harder. Right? How many grihasthas are sitting here in class today? Hardly any. Right. It's very difficult, right, as a grihastha. And I can tell you now that I'm only still around as a devotee because I was 8 years as a brahmachari, right? Like trying very seriously to purify myself. And it's only because of that I'm still able to do something as a grihastha. Gets a lot harder. And you want to practice Krishna consciousness your whole life, and at the time of death you want to remember Krishna. But it's not easy to go back to Godhead, so you have to be very serious. You have to make like a lifetime preparation to do that. Yeah, but you have to understand what Prabhupada meant by that. Prabhupada said, follow four regular principles, that's granted. And he said, chant your 16 rounds every day. Right, but what sort of rounds was Prabhupada talking about?
Attentive rounds.
Very attentive rounds. You know, just think the day that you die, right? The day that you pass away from this world, which could be today, right? Just think about what sort of rounds you want to chant on that day. Right, if you just want to, like, you know, like that, you're not going to, where do you think you're going to go? You become a sloth. take birth as a slug, right? And then just kind of, yeah, that's what you want, like that. So when Prabhupada says yes, Prabhupada does say that. Just follow the four regular principles, chant 16 rounds. But you can only chant 16 rounds if you come to the whole program, right? You're talking about, you guys are only in your 20s, right? Right? Then you've got to go through your 30s, right? That's your whole life changes. And you've got to go through your 40s and have your midlife crisis. Then you've got to go through your 50s, right? Where your body begins to break down. Right? And then you go through your 60s, where everyone around you starts to die. Right? And then you go through your 70s, if you make it. I think you've got to get to your 80s. So you're talking about like a long time like that. So you're only going to chant your 16 rounds every day if you have a program surrounding that. Right? If you don't hear the Bhagavatam, you won't chant every day. Right? Shravanam, Kirtanam. Right? You have to be hearing if you want to chant. And you have to chant if you want to hear. Right? It has to be a program. Right? Prabhupada said that. But he didn't just mean that. You have to understand what Prabhupada meant. Any other questions or comments?